Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome in to the NFL Free-for-All Show. I'm your host, Brian Hughes. This show is brought to you by Sports City Chefs. Go to www.sportscitychefs.com for all the player interviews, blogs, highlights. We have interviews with players such as Navarro Bowman. We have player interviews with soccer players, Rapone. A ton of interviews, a ton of content over there. Go ahead and check it out, guys. We're going to go ahead and get into our show tonight. We got a special show for you tonight here in the NFL Free-for-All Sports City Chef Kitchen. So we've had a lot of stuff that's transpired here in the last week, and perhaps none bigger than the COVID outbreak, which we talked a little bit about on last show. Between the Texans, they ended up at the time it was only four. It's actually now 9 players that have tested positive. Cam Newton tested positive this last week, and the Patriots ended up playing the game yesterday in a doubleheader fashion. It was originally scheduled for Sunday, and that game did actually go off on Monday as a doubleheader, and New England had a great plan defensively. Unfortunately, offensively, they just could not muster enough points, and they ended up losing that game 26-10 to the Chiefs. But believe me, the game was actually much, much closer than the score would indicate, and I would even say that New England may have provided the blueprint on how you would beat the Chiefs. We'll talk about that. Atlanta and Green Bay, the other game that played last night, Aaron Rodgers without his top 3 wide receivers, no Davante Adams, no Alan Lazard, no problem. They cruise 30-16 over the Atlanta Falcons. And this brings us to an interesting point for Dan Quinn here, because, you know, there was a lot of fans that were talking about potentially Dan Quinn should have been fired last offseason. When Atlanta really, really struggled last year, and then they ended up winning 6 of their last 8 games in order to put together a respectable 7-9 record. But really, I mean, obviously before those last 8 weeks, I mean, you were looking at a team that was a 1-win team about halfway through the year, 1-7. So, I mean, it was really ugly, and everybody knows, I'm sure, is familiar with the woes that are going on right now in Atlanta. Atlanta's had a double-digit lead in just about every game they played this year. They had a lead in Seattle, double-digit lead against the Cowboys, double-digit lead against Chicago, and unfortunately lost all 3 of those games in the fourth quarter. We talked a little bit about that game, some of the shortcomings last week, so we're not going to get into that too much. But I did want to just say Dan Quinn definitely on the hot seat. Bill O'Brien, as most of you guys probably have heard, Bill O'Brien out in Houston. He was let go as the head coach there and general manager there in Houston. We're going to talk a little bit more extensively about Bill O'Brien. Was it the right move to let Bill O'Brien go? And if yes, was right now the best time to do so? We're going to talk about that for sure. We're also going to talk a little bit about COVID and how COVID is playing a huge part in how the rest of the remainder of the NFL schedule plays out. So, unfortunately, Tennessee and the Steelers both had to take their bye weeks early last week because of the fact that Tennessee Titans players, multiple players, tested positive for COVID. Therefore, in a precautionary move, the game essentially was canceled. So this is now the bye week for Tennessee and for Pittsburgh. So if there's any indiscretions moving forward, let's say, knock on wood, a Pittsburgh player or a Tennessee player test positive for COVID, what is going to be the protocol for that? So we're definitely going to talk a little bit about that as well on the show today. So we'll talk about a little bit about COVID. We're going to talk a little bit about Bill O'Brien. And we're also going to talk a little bit about the NFC East, or unfortunately at this point, we'll call it the NFC Least, as they have a combined record of 3-12-1 at the quarter mark of the season. And that's all four teams, by the way. A combined record of 3 wins, 12 losses, and 1 tie. And oh, by the way, Philadelphia just got their first win against the 49ers on Sunday night, and they're now in first in the division. So let that sink in. 4 weeks into the season, they get their first win, and they're now in first place in that division. So that division, we're going to talk a little bit about that as well. But before we get into that, let's talk about the news and notes from around the league. We talked about some of it. We talked about the Monday games, Baltimore and Washington. Baltimore got out early, got all over Washington, ended up winning that game 31-17. The Los Angeles Chargers against the Tampa Bay Bucks. This was actually a pretty compelling and interesting game. I thought Justin Herbert played really well in this game and had – chances in this game really to win. Ultimately, Tom Brady leads them to a touchdown late, and then Herbert throws probably the worst pass he threw of the game and threw an errant interception with less than 3 minutes to go in the game, and that really sealed the deal. Seattle, now 4-0, beat Miami. Fitzmagic no more. As good as he played last week versus the Jets, Fitzmagic did not play particularly well in this game against Seattle. Not to say that he was awful by any means, but he did have 2 picks, did not throw any touchdowns, and, you know, they really kind of struggled to move the ball on the ground. I mean, when your quarterback is your leading rusher and he's not a design runner, being Fitzpatrick, you know you're probably having a rough day. Minnesota and Houston. Minnesota gets off the snide. They finally get a W. They're now 1-3, winning 31-23 over Houston. As we're going to be talking about later, Bill O'Brien does lose his job. That team drops to 0-4. Houston definitely had opportunities in this game to not only win it, but to also prevent some big plays that Minnesota really took advantage of. The biggest thing right now is there's really no part of Houston's team offensively, defensively, that is really clicking. Offensively, defensively, this team is just really not on the same page. They really made a team like Minnesota, which granted I thought would be a very good team this year, and they haven't been. They were 0-3 going into this game. But they really made Minnesota look like a playoff-caliber team, and that's not necessarily a compliment. It just goes to show you kind of where, you know, where the Texans are at this point. You know, and then on the offensive side for the Texans, you know, Deshaun Watson throws for 300 yards, 2 touchdowns. David Johnson, he was okay. He had 63 total rushing yards. And 29 receiving yards. So he had about 100 yards from scrimmage. But, you know, and once again, we're going to talk about this with Bill O'Brien, but I really feel like Will Fuller is a better number two. He did have 100 yards receiving, but I really feel like the loss of DeAndre Hopkins is really, really starting to show in this team comp and really how well they're able to deal with other teams moving forward. Detroit jumped out to an early lead against New Orleans. Unfortunately, New Orleans came rolling back and did end up winning that game 35-29. Like I said, Detroit got out to an early 14-0 lead in the first quarter. New Orleans ended up at half being up 28-14. And really, I feel like Detroit never recovered from that point. They did put up a late touchdown in this game. But Matt Stafford threw for three touchdowns, did have the one pick. But unfortunately, the same old seems to be the problem for the Lions. They're really not able to run the ball. And the defense is just giving up way too much yardage. Cleveland, this is something we mentioned last week. Cleveland with another victory. This is the first time that Cleveland last week was the first time that Cleveland has had a above 500 record since 2011. So let that sink in. I mean, 10 plus years of having a negative record. They are now sitting at 3-1. So Cleveland dispatches Dallas. And they score 50 points in the process, which is something else that we'll be talking about during our NFC East segment. Jacksonville ends up getting beat by Cincinnati 33-25. Carolina beats Arizona 31-21, which is surprising to some. A lot of people thought Arizona was going to be that up-and-coming team this year. Carolina's actually really performed well under their new head coach and Teddy Bridgewater, their new quarterback. You know, it's really interesting at this point. We'll see how Carolina plays out. But with that win, you know, I mean, that they firmly are right in the hunt of the playoffs. So they've played pretty well. The L.A. Rams beat the New York Giants 17-9 in a low-scoring game. They're able to get the W. Buffalo dispatches the Las Vegas Raiders 30-23. That keeps Buffalo's season perfect so far at 4-0. Indianapolis does beat Chicago 19-11, and the real question is, what do you do now? Because Foles did not play particularly well, and you've already moved away from you've already moved away from Mitchell Trubisky at this point. So we'll get into that. But the first topic that we have for you guys tonight is going to be the firing of Bill O'Brien. A, was it right? Was it the correct move for the McNair family to fire Bill O'Brien at this point? And B, should they have fired Bill O'Brien, the head coach? Should they have fired Bill O'Brien, the general manager? Or should they have let them both go? So we'll get into that and more right after this brief message. So Bill O'Brien, the head coach of the Houston Texans, as most of you know, was let go after an 0-4 start. Now, here is the thing. I am a huge proponent of the facts. I'm a stats guy, a stats geek, if you will. And I think it's important to understand the stats, to understand factually everything that's going on, in order to make an informed decision. It's very easy to look at the records. It's very easy to say, oh, he traded, you know, DeAndre Hopkins. Yes, he should go. All right, well, let's look at this and let's figure out whether or not that's actually the case. Because I'm not so sure. I'm just going to throw it out there. I know some of you are going to disagree with that. I was hoping some of the boys would be here in the kitchen tonight so we could discuss and we could debate that. I'm not sure if they're going to be able to make it here, but we are going to discuss this. We are going to discuss exactly what's going down. And once again, I'm hoping that you guys can understand my perspective. So here's my perspective. Bill O'Brien is a winning football coach. He's got a career head coaching record in Houston of 52-48. He's the only head coach in the history of the program to have a above 500 record. It's like I said, it's worth discussing. I think it's worth, you know, putting that out there. So the other thing is that Bill O'Brien started 0-3 last year. Remember, they were calling for Bill O'Brien's head last year when the Houston Texans started 0-3. And what did they do last year? Well, they went on a small run and ended up going 10-3 over their last 13 games to win the division outright and go 10-6. Now, you could be one of those people that say, "Yeah, but Brian, look at the playoffs. Look, what has he done in the playoffs?" And you know what? I would agree with you. He's not done well in the playoffs. He's 2-4. But how many teams over that same time frame have not made the playoffs at all? Bill O'Brien has had a winning record in 5 of 6 seasons as a head coach. I'm not going to hold this season against him because, as I just mentioned, they were 0-3 last year, and they were able to turn it around and had not only post a winning record but win the division. So I'm not going to hold an 0-4 start against him on they didn't, you know, whatever happens this year, that's against him. Bottom line is they didn't get it done the first quarter of the season. I get it, but he didn't get an opportunity to show what he could do the rest of the year. So with that said, let's take a quick look here. And we do have a caller in queue, so let me go ahead and bring in the caller. Caller from the 703, you are on with the Sports City Chefs. How you doing tonight?
You know, man, it really irks my nerve to jump on and have to really go at you like I'm about to have to. Because, you know, at the end of the day, Bill O'Brien was a beneficiary, if you will, of playing in a division that was subpar at best. So I honestly believe that a lot of his wins and a lot of his division titles, albeit, you know what I'm saying, congratulations, you got to wear a T-shirt and a hat that said division winners. However, this man clearly lost his locker room. You know, we can't sit there and poo-poo the fact that there were several players that are no longer on this roster that could have helped him. I think, honestly, if he was just – it could have – may have saved him. But he was the head coach and the GM, and I can go down the laundry list of bonehead GM moves that he made.
Correct.
Over the past 2 to 3 years that have set the Houston Texans back. Again, I get it. They started out 0-3 and went on a run. You don't go into the season with the game plan, you know, let's start 0-3. Let's not do what we need to do to win winnable ball games. And then all of a sudden, let's catch fire and go on a run. I have zero sympathy for Bill O'Brien. Zero. You know what I'm saying? I can't really sit here and jump on board and say, you know, we need to give him a pass in 2020 season because this has been the same way he's gone about his business the past few seasons. You know, yeah, Deshaun Watson got paid. I get you. Yeah, they lost DeAndre Hopkins. I get you. But these are moves that you made.
Right. Serious, I'm on board with you, buddy. I hear what you're saying, and I appreciate your passion. I appreciate your enthusiasm. And last week, I said he had to go. All I'm simply doing is I'm simply saying, hey, you know what? Right now, we're in the Sports City Chef's Kitchen of Justice. All right, the honorable Serious is presiding. I'm simply proposing that we look at the facts, not the person, and we separate the two, Bill O'Brien, the GM, and Bill O'Brien, the head coach. We look at the facts and say, hey, was it justified to fire him? And B, was it right to fire him now? Not necessarily for Bill O'Brien, because you know what? They're going to pay him regardless. Was it right for the organization to fire him now? And all I'm simply saying is, let's look at the facts. He's been a head coach in Houston for 6 seasons. They've had a winning record in 5 of 6 seasons. They went to the playoffs 5 of 6 seasons. They've been the division champ 4 of 6 seasons. Now, is he surrounded with great players? I'm not saying they're not. Every head coach, as you know, everybody wants to say, oh, yeah, look how great Brady was. Yeah, well, he had Bill Belichick. Look how great, you know, Joe Montana was. Yeah, he had Bill Walsh. Oh, look how great, you know, Bradshaw was. Yeah, well, he had Knoll. Like, there is no such thing as being a dynasty or being a fantastic program and not having a combination of a strong head coach and a strong and good quarterback, right? Like, I think we can both agree on that. I'm simply saying this. When you lose the locker room, and I agree with your point 100%, when you lose the locker room, you've got to go regardless, right? And I think that's – I agree with your point. I think he lost the locker room. But what I'm saying is, does this make sense for the Houston Texans, right? They had – if you go to Stats, Inc., and you look at the stats, they had the hardest schedule to start the season of any team in the NFL, period. It's not close. It's not debatable. They played the Steelers. They played the Kansas City Chiefs. They played the Baltimore Ravens. I mean, you're talking about all undefeated teams right now. This isn't a team. These aren't teams that, you know, are scraping by. This isn't a situation like Dan Quinn in Atlanta where you're playing a bad team and you find a way to allow that team to beat you. You're talking about playing the cream of the crop, quite possibly, if I ask the Steelers fan, like Sirius, you could arguably say 3 of the top 5 teams in the league, correct?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Okay. So my point is, what I'm saying is, if you know that this man has started 0-3, for example, last year, they just played the toughest portion of their schedule. They now, the remaining schedule, they have the 4th easiest remaining schedule in the NFL. So if Romeo Cornell now goes, for example, let's say that over their last 13 games, let's say that they go 9-5 and they end up 9-7 and they win the division. Is that really any different than if you would have allowed Bill O'Brien to stay there? Because my biggest contention is if you're going to fire your head coach, you need to have a plan, right? And I think that if we were to make a short list of the coaches that we would want to hire for an up-and-coming program, right, whether it be Eric the Enemy over in Kansas City, whether it's Josh McDaniels. I mean, you're talking about these guys more than likely aren't going to be available to even interview till next February, right? So my point is, right, you fire your coach 4 games into the season. Now what are you going to do if Romeo Crennel loses the locker room? There's no one left. This is to me the exact same scenario as the reason why I said, hey, don't move off Mitch Trubisky this early in the year. They brought in, I know they got the win, but they in Nick Foles too early, because now when Nick Foles performs poorly, which I knew he would, and he kind of did last week, when he performs poorly, you really don't have any avenue to go back to Mitch Trubisky, right? Because you've already pulled him saying, hey, we're going to replace you with Nick Foles because you're not playing well. So how do you in turn go back to Trubisky when the faith of the fan base and the players are now squarely on Foles? I feel like this is the same type of situation. I couldn't agree with you more. Bill O'Brien was not a good GM. Plain and simple. I have the timeline for every trade he's ever made. And the biggest problem that Bill O'Brien made is he traded away their future to try and make a winner now. And you know what? Nas said this perfectly last week on our show. The reason why most head coaches cannot be GMs is because the GM's primary responsibility is to not just build for today, it's to build for tomorrow. It's to build that foundation so that after the head coach, if if it should so be it, that you continue to have a prosperous future. You continue to have a well-stocked cupboard. Bill O'Brien has literally completely depleted the cupboard and went all in, we're going to try and win now. And that's essentially to save his own job. You look at what he's traded away in the last 12 months. He's traded away a first, second, third, two fourths, and another second round pick. And that's just in the last 12 months. Anybody who's a fan of the movie Draft Day knows Kevin Costner traded a first, second, and third round pick to get the number one overall pick. And that was the number one overall pick. And what did the entire front office say to him, Sirius? You traded, you literally mortgaged our entire future on this one guy.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he did. He literally traded away their entire future.
Go ahead. I'll let you finish.
I'm just going to say, he literally traded away their entire future. So then what does he have to do? He's got to make a deal now to try and get some picks back. So, you know, you can believe the stories. You cannot believe the stories. I'm of the proponent. If you have a top five player in the NFL at any position, you need to figure out a way to keep that guy happy. You need to figure out a way to make it work. You know, I've heard reports that, you know, the Houston Texans were never going to sign DeAndre Hopkins, that, you know, that they weren't going to be able to work out a contract. I think it's hogwash. You look at the salary of what Kenny Stills is making. You look at the contract of what Johnson, their running back, is making, David Johnson. You look at the salary of what Brandon Cooks, a guy that they traded to get in there, is making. It's far more than what they would have had to have paid DeAndre Hopkins. It doesn't make sense. The only thing that makes sense is that when they swapped those players, not only did they get a small amount of cap relief, but they also got a second-round pick. He mortgaged their entire future to the point where he literally had to start trading his stars in order to recoup some of that future. So all I was going to say to wrap it up is Bill O'Brien, the GM, was horrific. I literally went through all his trades, and I don't want to bore you guys to death, so I won't do it. But serious, even going all the way back to August 8, 2019, that's the first trade that Bill O'Brien ever executed. He traded with Cleveland for Duke Johnson, a conditional pick. Well, that conditional pick ended up turning out to be a third-round pick because Lamar Miller ended up getting hurt. DeAndre Foreman hurt his leg. So you traded a third-round pick for a guy that Cleveland was probably going to cut anyways. I mean, there is just several scenarios like that where he just made some really bonehead moves. I really do think he is a good coach, but like you said, you can't trade away the stars and not expect your team. You know, the veterans feel like, are we trying to win here or are we not trying to win here? Like I said, I think he's a decent coach, but he definitely lost the locker room, but he's a horrific GM. Never should have been the GM.
So my only point to that, and again, I kind of agree where you're coming from, but here's the thing. They weren't competitive. That's another one. They weren't competitive in any game this season. Not a one. You know what I'm saying? So, I guess if you're the owner of the Houston Texans, okay, and you, I get it, you play Baltimore, you wasn't going to win that game. You play Kansas City opening night, you wasn't going to win that game. You had a lead, and the Pittsburgh Steelers, and you know, I'm a Steelers fan, were still in doubt. And all of a sudden, the second half, you managed 50-some-odd total yards of offense. All right? Essentially, we just bludgeoned y'all. We just bludgeoned them to death. But that Minnesota Vikings game last week, that was a very winnable game. And they got literally the score was really indicative of how bad they played. And that's why I feel as though if you're the GM of the Houston Texans, you have to make this move now because, again, as I alluded to before, this division is still up for grabs. Yeah, you can go on a run, and you got the talent to do it, but they weren't even competing. And so you have to shake up this. You have to shake the thing up, and I'm pretty sure there were some other things going on behind the scenes other than what happened on the field and this, that, and the third. But, you know, they weren't even competing. I can deal with a loss. I mean, again, like we lined out. They play three of the toughest opponents they're going to play all year. And nobody in their right mind was expecting them to beat Kansas City, to beat Baltimore. They were in Pittsburgh. You know what I'm saying? But that Minnesota game this past week, they needed to and should have won that ball game. They came out flat. They didn't know what the hell they were doing. And again, the score wasn't really indicative of how bad they played. But we can move on because we can spend all show talking about this thing.
All right, well, the next topic I got for you is the NFC East, which I've aptly renamed the NFC Least. So after the Sunday night games concluded, the NFC East now has a combined record of 3-12-1. Let that sink in, folks. We're a quarter of the way through the season, 3-12-1. And, oh, by the way, Philadelphia – beating San Francisco for their first win in week four took over control of that division. They're now in first place with their first win in the division. Sirius, how bad is the NFC East? And could we see a team make the playoffs with 6 or 7 wins? Could we have our first sub-500 division winner since the Seattle Seahawks way back when we had the beast mode run against New Orleans?
I mean, no team in this division wants to win it. I mean, we can go down team by team. There are glaring issues on every one of those teams. The New York Giants can't throw it, can't run it, can't catch it. Their defense is dope. The Philadelphia Eagles, their defense is somewhat decent, but Carson Wentz has taken significant steps back. His whole offensive line is hurt. You know, his receivers, his eligibles, we don't know who's playing. I'm pretty sure they just picked up a dude from the Safeway to come play ball against the Steelers this week. The Dallas Cowboys got one of the baddest offenses in the planet, but can't stop a nosebleed at all. That defense is super bad. Like, the Cleveland Browns ran for 300-plus yards on them just last week alone. That's just pretty bad. And please don't get me started talking about Washington. I live here, but right now, Ron Rivera is treating this like literally a preseason. You know, they're trying to figure out what's going on with Dwayne Haskins. They really have no eligibles outside of Terry McLaurin. You know, I mean, we can break that whole division down. But honestly, man, eventually, I think they're going to start beating on each other. You know, to this week, I think the Giants play the Cowboys, so somebody's going to get a much-needed win. You know, it's going to be insane. It's going to be insane, man. But it's very, very possible to answer your question that we can legitimately have a sub-500 division winner in the NFC playoffs this year, because I have a hard time seeing 8 wins out of this division.
Well, here's my thoughts, right? And I'm just going to throw this out there. So think about this for a second. Jerry Jones and the Dallas Cowboys have basically done everything they can to, you know, you could call it whatever you want, but finagle and mess with Dak Prescott over his contract, right? And all you hear from the general narrative in the public is QBs are judged based off of wins and losses. Well, here's what I can tell you. It doesn't matter how good of a quarterback you are. He's thrown for 500 yards in each of the last 3 games. Number one, I can't even, in all the time I've ever watched football series, I can't ever remember one time, not multiple times, I can't remember one time where I ever remember a quarterback having back-to-back games, let alone 3, where he's thrown 500 yards in a row. To me, that's more indicative of the fact of how bad Dallas's defense is than it is. The offense is fine. They're scoring on average 40 points a game. I'm sorry, if you score 40 points and you lose, there's a huge problem there. There's a huge red flag there. Dallas, I'm looking at you. You've spent all this money on your linebackers, and granted, I understand some of these guys are hurt, but you spent all this money on your linebacking core. You spent all this money on, you know, all these positions on defense to bolster the defense, and then you a team like Cleveland, which granted, I understand they're improved this year in the 3-1, they scored 50 points. Serious, 50. That's without Nick Chubb. They scored 50 points, and as you alluded to, they had 300 yards rushing against the Cowboys. Completely blew the defensive line off the ball. They could do whatever they wanted. Baker Mayfield, now granted, this is a team that scored. He only threw for 165 yards in that game because that's all he had to throw for. They literally could do whatever they wanted. They could not be stopped. And I just, you know, like you said, every team in this division has flaws. You know, whether you're looking at Philly and the fact that they just don't have any offensive playmakers, you know, whether it's Dallas and the fact that they literally could not stop any offense in the NFL. No. I mean, it's like a track meet. It's kind of like watching the Pac-12. Like everybody, there's all offense, no defense. Washington, yeah. To me, Washington is actually interesting, and I'm going to bring up an interesting question to you here in a second about Washington. But Washington, to me, has shown signs of life. They just need, I think, veteran leadership. And then the Giants, as you mentioned, I think once Saquon went down, I honestly believe they're literally playing for draft seed. You know, nobody's going to say that right now because they're only one game out of first. But the reality is that Saquon meant so much to that offense that without Saquon, they just can't move the ball. I mean, you look at the scores, serious, of their games the first 3 weeks, I don't think that they've scored more than 15 points, 16 points in any game this year. They just cannot score. They cannot move the ball effectively. They cannot possess the ball effectively. They're asking Daniel Jones to do way too much. But here's my question for you related to Washington. So Washington has one win right now, as you know, and so does Philly, who's currently leading that division. If Alex Smith gets cleared to play, which a lot of people are saying because, you know, he's on the short-term IR. He could be ready to play as soon as 2 weeks from now, not this week, but he could technically be ready next week. With this division basically wide open and up for grabs, if you're Ron Rivera, do you stick with Haskins or do you see what Alex Smith can give you?
So I know the answer to the question because, again, I live here and I listen to the sports talk radio and everything out here. And honestly, they would go to Kyle Allen before they would go to Alex Smith. For the simple reason is the fact that Kyle Allen played with Ron Rivera a season ago in Carolina. So the familiarity there would honestly open things up. And again, this division is wide open. It is wide open again when Chase Young gets back and everything. Their defense isn't playing bad. Their offense just can't move the ball because, you know, Dwayne Haskins missing reads and he's throwing the ball high. And, you know, he's the statue back there in the pocket. And, the issue with the Washington football team is honestly their offense. So if I'm Ron Rivera and if I'm that coaching staff, I look really, really hard this week. I mean, they got a tough opponent. They're playing the LA Rams, Sean McVay coming back to Washington thing. But if Dwayne Haskins goes out there and really stinks up the joint, which he has been known to do, you really got to look, you know, at Kyle Allen. You know, because, I mean, at the end of the day, the Washington football team is going to leave, you know, week five you know, a game and a half, maybe a two games out of first, depending upon what happens with the rest of the division. And as I said previously, the Giants play the Cowboys, you know, so another team is going to be behind the eight ball there. And then obviously the Steelers play the Eagles, and don't even get me started on that one. So the division is wide open. I think they will go to Kyle Allen before Alex Smith.
Yeah, and you know, that's a great point. You know, I brought up Alex Smith, but even with that, like you said, let's say Kyle Allen, because he does have experience in Ron Rivera's system. So, Kyle Allen, what do you think it would take in order for them to make the switch serious to Kyle Allen? Because, like you said, at this point, you could literally be 7-8 games into the season, right? We could be at the halfway point. And realistically, you know, Washington be, like, let's just say they're 3-5, and they could be right. They could be within a game. Like, what is it going to take, do you think, for them to go to the backup? Because if they're still in the hunt, do you think they leave Haskins in there? Or do you think at some point, if the play doesn't improve, because he hasn't played particularly well?
Well, honestly, they have to, because – The rumblings, you know, about the situation here in Metro Washington is, you know, Ron Rivera and that coaching staff is not sold on Dwayne Haskins being that guy. Keep in mind, this is the guy that he inherited. The last regime under Mr. Gruden and everybody, they wanted, you know, Dwayne Haskins. You know, they wanted, him to come in and be their quarterback. And so, and if you want to get technical, I think this is why Jay Gruden is no longer here in Washington, because Jay Gruden and Dan Snyder butted heads about who to draft. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And Jay Gruden, you know, didn't want Haskins. He ended up getting Haskins, but I digress. And so, honestly, if you're 3-5 at the halfway point, you know, you have to make that move. You really do, because, once again, this division is wide open. You know, you're going to really start to lose the locker room, and you're really going to have people ask a bunch of questions about what's going on, this, that, and the third. I mean, they have one win, you know what I'm saying? So, again, and it was a divisional win at that. So it's going to be very important to see how this plays out. But I won't be surprised if Dwayne Haskins goes out there and stinks it up like he did. It wasn't last week, but it was before that when they played Arizona. They went out and played Arizona, and he just stunk it up. You know, I think if he goes out there and does that again, Ron Rivera is going to have to pull him. And it could be as early as this week because, again, that L.A. Rams defense is not playing. That offense can't score, and the Washington football team does not have an offense to compete. So he's going to start trying to force things down the field and throwing into bad coverages and, you know, not protecting the football and not moving the pocket. I mean, it's going to be a bad look. So I can honestly say if you sit here next week and we're talking, I can honestly see a quarterback switch happening pretty quickly.
Yeah, it'll definitely be interesting to see, you know, how that kind of plays out. Next segment I want to talk about, Sirius, I want to talk about studs and duds and our Gold Star Award. So for those that aren't familiar with it, and for you, Sirius, me and Norm had talked about this. Unfortunately, Norm wasn't here tonight, but we wanted to talk about the teams that are studs right now, meaning teams that are 3-1 or 4-0 that we think may fade down the stretch. Teams that have started hot that may not be there when it's all said and done. And then teams that right now are 2-2, the duds, teams that are 2-2 or worse that we think still have a legitimate chance at the playoffs. So if you want, I'll go ahead and go first just to kind of give you an idea. I like to pick two in each conference. Doesn't mean I'm right, but here goes. So for my studs, I'm going to pick San Francisco. I'm a homer. I know it. Listen, two losses, both of them by less than a touchdown. They're missing team people on IR right now. They're going to get back Jimmy Garoppolo the week after this. They're going to get back Richard Sherman and Emmanuel Mosley, their top two corners, and they're going to get back Greenlaw, their number three linebacker. They're going to get all these guys back in the next 3 weeks. My biggest concern for these guys is they've already kind of went through their easier portion of their schedule series. It's going to get much, much more difficult from here. My other stud, I'm not willing to give up on this team, so call me crazy. I think that they play in a fairly easy conference. I don't buy into Chicago, so I'm going to go with Detroit. I said that I thought Detroit would be a team that would be right there at the end, that they would be contending for the playoffs. Listen, they have a swift missed catch in the end zone from being a team that was 2-2, and they've had some bad breaks. They could easily be a team that's 3-1 right now. They literally, unfortunately, right now are one of those teams that are still young, and they find ways to lose as opposed to find ways to win. I actually think Matt Patricia is a better coach than people give him credit for. I wish Ty was here so he could hear that, because I know that would rub him the wrong way. But I think Matt Stafford has played pretty well. I think the biggest thing is they have to figure out a way to run the ball more effectively. And I know that you would echo those same sentiments, but I'm not sold on Chicago. I know they started 3-1. I think they could fade down the stretch. Look, Green Bay is playing fantastic. I'm not taking away anything away from Green Bay. You look at what they've done. They've been unbelievable, but, and here's the big but, look at the teams that they've played to this point. They played Atlanta. They played Detroit. Minnesota's pretty good, but they won that game 43-34. They haven't played the heavy hitters when it comes to running, right? They haven't played the San Franciscos. They haven't played the Baltimores. They haven't played the teams that are known for running the ball, Kansas City. They haven't played the teams that are going to run it down your throat. And my question is, will they still be as dominant 6-8 weeks from now, once they've played those teams? I don't know. I've watched Detroit quite a bit this year. I know they're 1-3, and I could be way off base here, serious, but I'm going to say they're going to be the other stud. I think give it 8 weeks from now, and I think they're a team that's going to be right around 500. My duds, and some may say this is shocking, some may not. I've already said Chicago. I'm not sold on Chicago. I don't see Chicago being a team that's real good. I think they've benefited from the schedule some, and they've benefited from some lucky breaks. I don't have a second dud, in the division, because the remaining 3-1 teams, the Rams, Buccaneers, and then the 4-0 Seahawks, I think are all legitimately a good team. And I think the Packers will still be there at the end. Switching conferences, though, if we go to the AFC, studs here. This one's a little bit harder for me, man. I really want to say the Texans because I know their schedule, but the reality is I just can't pick them. This is going to sound crazy, but I'm going to pick the Raiders as a stud. I've watched them have a couple impressive wins. I feel like Derek Carr is pretty good, and I feel like they're playing better this year. They're not quite there yet. They're at 2-2, but I definitely think this is a team that's going to be contending for a playoff spot. The other team that I think could be there is the New England Patriots. As much as I said, look, I don't think they're going to make the playoffs this year. They're 2-2. You get Cam back. That run option is working. They're playing really well. They actually played surprisingly well against Kansas City. They're always coached well. They always have a sound defensive game plan. And I just think, you know, they're one of the few 2-2 teams that actually have a positive point differential. So that's the other stud. Now, as far as my duds, I got to go with Cleveland. Look, you play in the same division as the Steelers and the Ravens. As you know, Sirius, your team, your division, you're going to have to play these teams, and you're not going to be able to continue to beat up on Cincinnati. Baltimore and Pittsburgh, I think, is going to be a problem for Cleveland. I think they have some problems down the stretch. And the other 3-1 team, I'm going to go with the Tennessee Titans. I said this at the beginning of the year, and I'll stick around. I know they're 3-0 right now. I'm not overly impressed with their offense or their defense. I think the Indianapolis Colts is a better team, and I think when it's all said and done, I know they're 3-0 right now, but I think at the end of the year they're much more like a 500 club than a 10-6 or better club. Who do you got?
You know what? I love this game. It's a great game, man. So here's how I'm going to do it. I'm going to start with my duds first from the NFC. I'm going to break it down like that. And this first answer is going to shock a couple people, but I'm looking at the schedule right now, and I'm going to go to the New Orleans Saints as a dud team.
Okay.
Right now they're sitting at 2-2. Looking at the remaining part of their schedule, they did well against the Detroit Lions. You got the L.A. Chargers, who was no slouch. Then you got the Bears, Buccaneers, 49ers, Falcons twice, Broncos. I'm not going to even talk about the Eagles. Kansas City, the Vikings. You know, they got some pretty decent hitters coming up, you know, down the pike. And, you know, again, there's something off right now with the Saints. Their defense, you know, is almost as bad as the Dallas Cowboys. And I'm not seeing that same type of zip or whatever, from Drew Brees. Alvin Kamara needs an endorsement from me. So I salute him for that. I'm going to go ahead and piggyback off you with your other dud being the Chicago Bears. You know, honestly, I do agree with the move to pull Mr. Trubisky. I think we've seen all we need to see from him. I just don't believe that Nick Foles is also any better than him. We've seen what Nick Foles has been able to do, and I think that Matt Nagy, that move is going to cost him his job because we know what Nick Foles is capable of doing. I don't see, you know, them catching lightning in the bottle like he did in Philly and running it off to a championship. So my other dud in that conference is going to be the Chicago Bears. The studs, oh, good God. See, that's the thing, man. This division right here is so top-heavy. And this conference is so top-heavy. You know what? I'm going to go ahead and pull the trigger in. I'm going to go to the Minnesota Vikings.
All right.
I like the Minnesota Vikings. It's very, very weird, this love affair I have with Dalvin Cook and Kirk Cousins and company. And I think that this win against the Houston Texans a week ago really sparked something. Justin Jefferson's coming into his own. I do believe that they found a potential replacement for Stephon Diggs, who went to Buffalo. Adam Thielen, again, needs no endorsement from me. So I do believe that the Minnesota Vikings, even sitting at 1-3, can literally make a run and, you know, crawl their way into playoff contention. And so I'm not going to pick the 49ers because you already did that. I'm definitely not picking Detroit because I don't want this to get back to my man Ty. good God. Yeah, I said that on air. Let me see.
You still got the AFC, too.
Yeah, no, I'm thinking out loud. Can somebody please tell me what's going on with the Arizona Cardinals, please?
Yeah,
is
they look good. Like I said, they
not?
Look good week one, but they have definitely been Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde because last week, and that's the reason why I couldn't put him in serious. I'm with you, man. Last week was a real eye-opener for me, man. You lose in that fashion to that team, Carolina. I mean, you let Carolina put up 31 on you. And I get it was a 10-point game, but, Carolina was up 21-7 at half, and it never really felt like a close game.
That score really wasn't indicative of how bad they played. All right, so I'm going to do this. Somebody has to win this division. And I'm going to go with the Philadelphia Eagles. Somebody
right.
has to win.
Hey, I thought about it because, honestly, you know, like you said, somebody got to win the division. But, man, I'm just having a hard time nailing down who that person's going to be because, you know, I know Philly got their first win yesterday. But, I mean, and at some point you're thinking to yourself, they got to get healthier at wide receiver. But, I mean, they're bad. I mean, you got to take into account, you know, you're playing NFL teams, so I'm not taking anything away from them. But San Francisco is literally missing 7 starters on defense. And, you know, they were on their third-string quarterback. And, I mean, Philly still really wasn't able to move the ball until the fourth quarter.
Right.
It's just, you know, you look at it from an NFC perspective, like, how's that going to work out when they play New Orleans, they play Green Bay, they play Seattle? You know, I just don't see it right now unless they get a lot healthier at wide receiver.
Right.
That D-line's no joke.
But so here's the funny thing about the Eagles schedule, okay? So this week they played Pittsburgh and Heinz Field. And then the very next week they got Baltimore, okay? Then it kind of levels out because they got the Giants, Cowboys, got a bye, come back to play the Giants, Browns, Seattle. Then they got Seattle, Green Bay. Oh, snap. I don't know if I'm going to pick them. Oh, God.
Here's what I'll piggyback on that real quick and just say this, Sirius. I firmly believe this could be the year we see a 6-10 team make the playoffs. And I definitely think it's going to come down to division games. I think you could see 2 teams being 6-10 in the NFCs.
I don't see 8 wins. I said that a minute ago. You know what? F it. I don't even know who to pick. You know what? Forget it. Carolina Panthers. Give me Carolina Panthers. Just for argument's sake, because again, yeah.
All right, so last week I touched on something. We got about 5 minutes left in the show. Last week I touched on something, and I want to bring it up because, unfortunately, like you said, due to our new time constraints, you weren't able to be here. And so I wanted to get your perspective on this. So we did a little bit of research, and I thought this was actually pretty compelling. So I actually shared a story. This is, you know, this is my own investigative work. As you know, I'm a big stats nerd. And I thought this was pretty compelling. I shared last week why I thought Green Bay might be the smartest organization in the NFL. And Nas, gave a little kudos. So you have an all-pro future Hall of Fame quarterback in Aaron Rodgers. And as you know, he's got a little Jay Cutler in him, take it for better or for worse. But he gets a little mopey at times, a little – Henry, he's directly responsible for Mike McCarthy's firing, as you know. And I'm thinking to myself, if you're a brand new head coach, right, or you're a brand new front office, how would you go about motivating a future Hall of Famer to play up to the talent level that he possesses? And I thought, and you know what? You bring in his replacement. They draft a backup quarterback in round number 1. We all killed him over it. But if you look at the numbers, statistically across the board, the Green Bay Packers are actually worse in every defensive category this year than they were last year. They're worse. However, offensively, they're better in every statistical category than they were last year, including time of possession, which they're number 1 at, having the ball for almost 46 minutes a game. So here's the deal. Aaron Rodgers, 70% completion percentage, 14 touchdowns, 0 picks. Did Green Bay finally motivate Aaron Rodgers to be the quarterback that we all thought he was 2 years ago? Or did suddenly the supporting cast just get a little bit better?
I'm going to answer this question, and it's going to shock nobody because I made no bones about it. I don't think that they motivated, you know, Aaron Rodgers by drafting his quote-unquote replacement because, again, if you kind of think back to when Aaron Rodgers got drafted, Brett Favre was still there. I think, honestly, this is year two with the same group of people. You know what I'm saying? Matt LaFleur came in, brought in a whole new system, a whole new way of doing things. You know, Aaron Rodgers is kind of, like you alluded to, the Brett Favre diva type, where he likes it this way, he likes it the other way, and he finally bought in, and the same guys are calling the shots. You know, Devontae Adams is still there. You know, MVS is still there. Lazard is still there. The running backs are still there. This is the same group of people. And, again, I think they've benefited a little bit from playing a somewhat easier schedule. Talk to me after they lose two or three and see if he's still talking about, you know, get this dude out of here. But I don't subscribe to that. I think, you know, camaraderie and familiarity makes people play a lot better, makes people play a lot more relaxed and free. And when you're playing a team like the Atlanta Falcons that don't know what a pass rush is, you can sit back there, do your taxes, and you know, text your woman and throw the bombs to receivers, it makes it easy for you.
Yeah, you know, it's a good point. Like I said, it's just hard for me because if you look at how free agency played out, they let Blake Martinez walk, their leading tackler from last year. They lose a corner in free agency. They don't bring in anything offensively to make them better. Nothing in the first three rounds, no starters, nothing is better. As a matter of fact, they lost Brian Bulaga, their left tackle. Their right tackle. So you could say on offense and defense that they actually got worse. However, defensively, the metrics, if you look at the metrics, yards per carry, you look at penalties, you look at sacks, all the metrics are down. Defensively, all the metrics are up. Offensively, it's just fascinating. Aaron Rodgers, definitely the gold star performer of the first quarter of the season. But that is all the time that we have, Sirius. I do appreciate you joining me today, buddy. And as always, I look forward to chopping up some more football with you. Give me a final thought before we close out the kitchen here tonight.
Yo, man, it's such a pleasure to be here with you guys, you know, on another edition of the football show. I'm going to say this and I'm going to get out of here. Week one, they played the Vikings. Week two, they played the Lions. Week three, they played the Saints. Week four, they played the Falcons. Again, they're tougher competitions ahead of them. I'll be curious to see how A-Rod looks. But with that being said, man, y'all be safe. Lord willing, I'll be in here probably tomorrow doing some stuff with TT and a bunch of the guys, man. Come check us out, man. We love you guys. Be safe. Go.
So Sirius is out. Well, that's all the time that we have tonight. I hope you enjoyed the show. That's all the time we have here in the Sports City Chef's Kitchen. The NFL free-for-all will be back next Tuesday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern. I hope you enjoyed the show. Listen, like, and continue to listen.